welcome to Brotherly Pod. Here it is, Tuesday, January 30, 2024. January's almost over. Thank God. I feel like this month has been going on for 3 years now.
It has lasted an entire decade. I swear to God.
Well, we're back under some, again, not great circumstances. I feel like I've been saying that a lot lately with this team. Listen, everyone, we're not going to spend much time on this topic again. I did a whole episode on Sunday with Mike and Manny. Mike is a lawyer, Manny's Canadian. We went into more detail than either one of us ever could.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you mentioned, I'm here.
Noah's here. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not as qualified as Manny or Mike to be talking about the legal stuff.
But all five players that we assumed, Hart, McLeod, Dubé, Foote, and Formanton, have all been directed to surrender to the London police in charge of sexual assault. Carter Hart's lawyer, Savard Foy, LLP, released a statement. We act for Carter Hart and can confirm he has been charged with one count of sexual assault. He is innocent and will provide a full response to this false allegation in the proper form, a court of law. Until then, we have no comment. Morgan Savard and Riaz Sayani, whoever his lawyers are, put that out, as I believe everyone has said, that their client is innocent, because of course your lawyers that are getting paid thousands of dollars an hour are not going to come out and talk about how fucking guilty you are. So,
I mean, first thing of, I did learn a little bit about defense attorneys, but I do know that obviously they're not going to come out and say that their client did it, because what's the whole point of having a trial then?
Yeah, so I've talked about this now. Noah, this is your first time since this all broke. If you have anything to add before we get into the... There's actually a bunch of Flyers news we actually have to talk about. So anything you have to say on the Carter Hart nonsense?
I'll keep this pretty short. You know, I don't know when... I don't think they've mentioned when the court... Because I'm assuming that, like, I've yet to hear the latest frequent Flyer.
Way to support the brand.
I will be listening to it. Don't you worry. I just haven't gotten caught up yet. I don't know if the legal system is as similar in Canada as it is in the U.S., where they need to go through arraignment, and then, although I'm not sure, I'm sure that they do have to still go through arraignment, which is basically them saying whether or not they're going to be posting bail or how much bail, if they'll get any bail or whatever. I also don't know if they've mentioned when the trial itself will be. I don't know. I would assume that maybe some of that comes out on the 5th when the London police, do their press conference,
give their official statements on the situation. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if that, most likely this will probably last at least to the end of the season. I can't see it being a real short
legal
process.
It's probably
going to
last for at least another year is probably a good bet on this one.
I would bet that.
At bare minimum, yeah.
I mean, not to take away from the human side of this, because obviously all of our thoughts are with the victim, and hopefully she's able to get as much support as she is. But looking at the hockey point of view, I would assume that this means Carter Hart has played his last game as a Flyer, regardless if he is found innocent or guilty. I mean, with the fact that we have some young goalies that look very promising, especially in Ersin and Kolosov, on top of the fact that it's just bad PR to bring him back, I would assume he's probably let go by the Flyers after this season. I don't know if it's still being a criminal investigation, still being not investigation at that point, but I don't know if with them being on trial, if the Flyers would be able to just completely get rid of his contract. I wouldn't see how that would be a problem.
I guess they're waiting for that. I think was it Darren Dredger tried to get in contact with the NHL about this, and they do not have an answer for it yet. So he's still in the books right now. He's still in the active roster for the Flyers.
Is he? I thought he was put on the LTIR. I may have just...
Nope, he's still
okay.
Still on. Still getting paid by the Flyers for now. I assume maybe when everything becomes set in stone by the police on the 5th, maybe we'll get some more answers to that one. But Yeah, I mean, he's played his last game with the Flyers. That's
I can't see him
probably
wearing,
true. Probably his last NHL game at this point, unless the Oilers sign him, because that's the kind of scumbag organization they are. But, you know, I don't know. You know, he's an RFA at the end of the year. You know, do they qualify him just to keep his rights in the case that this isn't settled by then? Do they just flat out let him go? Does he get put on some kind of non-roster leave between now and then? I have no idea what's happening.
Yeah, hopefully,
I don't think anybody does, quite frankly.
Hopefully this conference on the this press conference on the 5th will bring to light a lot more answers than questions. Of course, this is all we know so far, so I don't have any more insight that I would know. I did see some people mentioning wondering if the NHL or the teams of the players involved may do what the New England Patriots did when Aaron Hernandez was, convicted of murder. I don't know if it happened when he was on trial, when he was convicted, or whatever, but they did allow fans to bring in an Aaron Hernandez jersey and, I believe, exchange it for another jersey. I saw some people wondering if that might happen. I've not seen any confirmation about that, because I know that there are probably quite a few Flyers fans who have a Hart jersey.
I have a game-worn Carter Hart jersey that I now don't know what to do with.
Yes. Well, I had my first reverse retro was Ivan Provorov, and now I don't really want to wear his jersey. And then my other reverse retro was Carter Hart.
Oops.
At least the second one is not really good, so I'm not too hung up on that. But as a selfish part of this, because obviously what I'm going through is nothing close to what the victim is going through. But yeah, I did see some people bringing that up as that would be a nice thing for the NHL or the teams to do. Just because I would assume it's mainly the Flyers, because like Dylan Dubé may have a good amount of Flames fans with Dubé jerseys, but I don't know how many Devils fans have McLeod or Cal Foot jerseys.
Yeah, I can't imagine the Alec Formenton store is up and running these days.
Can't imagine there's many of those either. But damn. Yep, that's all I really have to say about this, because like I said, I have no further insight.
Yeah, and, you know, we do have to talk about this from a hockey perspective. And listen, Carter Hart's a predator and should be in jail for the rest of his life at this point. But, you know, it is kind of, as recently as that Colorado game last weekend, which was his last, really throughout most of December and January, the fan base had turned on him pretty hard and was begging for Sam Merson to play. And from a hockey perspective, it's always like, man, you guys better be fucking careful what you're wishing for here without Carter Hart. Because the reality is, this guy was very good at what he did on the ice, and it's going to be very difficult to move on without him. You know, Urson is going to get thrown into the deep end, ready or not, and fucking Cal fucking Peterson is backing him up. That is a significant downgrade here. And
you got to wonder if Danny Briere goes out. I know that we don't really want him to be buying for a playoff push, and I don't think that we should be doing this. But I gotta wonder if he at least goes out for, like, at least an upgrade over Cal Peterson.
I don't think it happens at the deadline, but, you know, here's the thing. Hart's gone. Felix Sandstrom's the UFA. There's no fucking way that guy's coming back right now. And it makes more Peterson is making $5 million a year. It costs $3.85 million to bury him in the AHL, and his buyout is only $1 million. For next season, which means you could buy him out, sign a reasonable backup and a third string AHL goalie, all for less than it would cost to bury Peterson in the AHL. And they would all three of them be better options than Peterson playing in the NHL. So yeah, this summer, goaltending is going to have to be pretty high on the list of things that they're going to have to address. They need a legitimate partner with Kolosov in the AHL, and you need somebody that doesn't completely fucking suck at the NHL level.
Yep. Yeah, so just like you're saying, it looks like the plan for Danny Briere is to find an NHL ready backup. Like
the market is trash, by the way.
It is awful
rough
for that
for backup goal. My guess right now is Anthony Stolarz. He would make the most sense.
I wouldn't be surprised if Stolarz or Lion comes back.
I had Stolarz or Lankanen. Those are my two guesses right now.
Lankanen I could see as well. I would say that those three are my
It's a pretty shallow list. Lots of aging guys, lots of not upgrades over Peterson. You know, right now it seems like Stolarz would be the guy of that group that I would be down for a year or two until they know what they have in Kolesov. And let's hope that guy can fucking transfer his game to the, you know, North American level and look good here. Because if he bottoms out, if he just turns out to be another Krill Ustaminko or something, you're in some trouble.
Then you get... As well, like, then you're going back, you're setting yourself back several years because then you're waiting for Zevragin or Bjarnason to hopefully.
I don't think I've ever
guy.
Heard anybody pronounce his actual name yet. I just know it's Igor, the goalie Zevragin. Igor.
I think it's Zevragin. If it's Zevragin,
no idea.
If I did get it wrong, it let me know. I thought I heard someone say Zevragin.
That's close enough.
Could be wrong. At least I'm not like. Igor Zvergenabra, like some people on here would do.
Wow. I probably wouldn't. Let's be real.
So, we got to hope that Kolesov can translate his game over to North America. As you mentioned, most likely Kolesov starts off in the AHL. Could just be a one season thing there. I mean, it all depends on how his game can translate from Russia. I mean, he's doing really well in the KHL, which is supposed to be better than the AHL. But, of course, translating your game from the from Olympic size rinks to North American size rinks can be difficult. So, like you've been saying, just gotta hope that Kolesov really works out.
Some other news. Owen Tippett re-signs with the Flyers. 8 years, $49.6 million. That breaks down to 6.2 AAV. He has 4 years of a
no-trade,
which is a 10-team no-trade list between 2026 to 2030. So that's the third year and on of that deal for 4 years there. Which is
The third to sixth year.
Yes.
So, which I think is pretty good. I mean... I think maybe it would have been a better contract if it was 6 years instead of eight, but
by six was my prediction. Yeah.
But like, at least with the 8 years, those last 2 years. So once you get to the end of the 6 years of that contract and you know, you have those two final years that may be like bad, you might be able to move him. Especially because he won't have any no trade or no movement clause for those last 2 years. And predicting what the cap will be at in like 6 years is a complete crapshoot.
Nearly impossible. Yeah.
But we can at least assume that if he's at least in 6 years, if he's able to go like reach a higher potential than where he's at right now. But then comes back to about where he is for those last 2 years. I think that may be a movable contract, especially if, let's say, the salary cap goes up about, I don't know, $15 million in the next 6 years. That might not be a hard contract to move. I think it's a pretty good deal overall.
He has 49 points in 77 games last season. He's up to 30 points in 46 games this season. The money's spot on. You know, 6.2 is right in the market of where you want someone like Tippett. The term, I mean, it's whatever. 6 years, 8 years at this point. He's only 25, so, you know, you got some wiggle room there. The trade protection is not terrible. Thank Christ Chuck Fletcher wasn't here. He would have gotten a full-on, you know, no movement the entire 8 years. So, you know, they can do it. It's fine. The cap's going to go up. It just becomes now... You got Farabee under contract until 2028 at $5 million. You've got Tippett under contract now until the end of fucking time at 6.2. Konechny has 1 year left on his deal at 5.5. I got to assume they're going to re-sign him sooner or later to a max-term deal.
I think Elliot Friedman mentioned that he believes that the Flyers are going to go after a Konechny extension next.
It wouldn't surprise me. So he's going to get max-term, max-length as well. That's, you know, barring they can get him at a semi-reasonable number, maybe in the 7 to 8 million range, though that feels light right now. It'll probably be closer to 9 if I had to guess. But that's a lot of term. You're committing to a lot of wingers right now, which is,
and then you got to remember that
interesting.
Of course, the plan is that within the next 3 years, hopefully, Matvei Michkov is coming over. And you know,
and you already have Forster and Brink and Lexell and Hathaway.
Andre.
And yeah, you got a lot of fucking bodies on this team right now.
You do.
And none of them are centers.
Nope. So I feel like that's going to be with the Flyers sort of in a free fall right now in the standings. I think they're 18th worst. I think they're the second worst team in the playoffs right now.
What a glowing endorsement.
I'm just saying, and, you know, if this is the Flyers coming back down to earth like we thought they would do back in mid-November, and it just took a couple extra months, we might see this team get into a spot where they're a draft lottery team. Probably not. They probably don't have a good probability to get the first overall pick.
No.
But they could end up close to about like in the 10 to 12 range.
Worst case, whatever you want to call that.
I don't know. I mean, I got to also assume that Danny Briere might. I feel like the month of February is going to be really telling with how aggressively Danny Briere sells at the trade deadline.
Which brings us to the Ryan Poehling extension. 2 years, 3.8 mil. That's 1.9 AAV. And, you know, if you've been listening to the show over the last few weeks, there's been a lot of talk about re-signing Nick Seeler. And my thought on that one is he's fine, but why are we polluting this team with these random bodies? And I'm very similar along that Poehling extension of, like, he's fine, it's a 4C, whatever, it's only a 2-year contract, doesn't particularly matter, but why? Why is this the fucking priority right now of making sure that Ryan Poehling doesn't go anywhere?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really get it as much. When I saw that it was going to be, like, $1 million, I was like, okay, that's whatever. That it's $1 million, like, the fact that it's just under two makes me, I don't think it's a terrible contract.
You can get any run-of-the-mill 4C for $1 million.
Exactly.
And you're paying Poehling double that to do whatever it is he's doing.
Yeah. I think it was a bit unnecessary, to be completely honest. Like you've been saying, it's just, why? I mean, he's been fine for us. Do I think that he's worth $2 million? Probably not,
but I mean, they're also not financially desperate enough where that's going to make or break them either. They can afford to pay their, you know, how much is this fucking bottom line getting paid right now?
Oh my God. Cause what?
Hathaway's at 2.3. Delorier is at 1.7. And now Poehling's at 1.9.
Wait, how much is Delorier again?
1.7.
I thought he was making more. No, he's got long term. That's what it was.
Yeah,
he's
got
4 years
left.
I remembered the four and I'm like, is he getting paid $4 million to be on our bottom line? Because if so, that's awful. But thank God it's only like $1 million. It's less than $2 million. But
about $6 million they have wrapped up in their fourth line right now.
Jesus Christ.
Which is insane. Especially considering Nick Delorier is not even playing 5 minutes of ice time anymore.
Honestly, you could have a perfectly fine fourth line for half of that.
Yes.
Like, just, you can find a left wing, a center, and a right wing who are good enough to be NHL fourth liners that can bring a little bit of offense and some defense.
And give them $1 million a season.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
But I think the bigger thing, if it was just Ryan Poehling who was getting overpaid a bit, I don't think people would be like,
you can deal with one overpaid fourth liner, but
I don't
not three.
See anyone. Exactly. Yeah. Like when Delorier was signed two years ago.
2 years ago. Yeah.
Gee, like, you know, the whole solace was like, at least it's only one fourth liner that we're overpaying that we gave a bad contract to. And now, like, we're overpaying Ryan Poehling. We're overpaying Garnet Hathaway. It's just, and I get that it's not like other overpays. Like, we're not overpaying, like Calgary's overpaying with Jonathan Huberdeau. But still, you, when you have those,
it's just unnecessary. If
everyone's just like a little overpaid, it starts adding up. It's like when it's like, oh, that's only 99 cents, but if you buy like 50 of them, that's gonna be you're gonna be paying a lot.
Yeah, and it doesn't really matter now. They've got the cap. This roster is under relatively decent financial construction for the time being, until that connecting extension. I'm sure that'll start fucking everything up, but until then, they're fine. They can deal with it next year. But I noticed this on Cap Friendly, because I'm writing my 24-25 opening night roster prediction, which I can't wait to put out, because everyone unanimously tells me how much it sucks all at the same time. But what I noticed, they already have got 12 forwards under contract. They have 4 defensemen, but they've got Zamula, who's an RFA. Adderd's deal is a one-way, and Andre should be in the NHL. So that's 7 defensemen. And 2 goalies with Urson and Peterson. Their roster's full for 24-25 already. Which means that they're going to need to get creative if they want to make any fucking upgrades or what. We've sat here and talked about they're going to run this fucking team back. Well, they're built right now to run this team back.
How much cap space do they have next year? Well, they're going to get about $4 million because of Hart.
We do some quick math skis here.
Because Hart's, what, $3.79 million?
That's where the financial benefit comes in, considering he was probably going to make $7 to $8 million a year. So having go away gives them a little bit of freedom, but they lose their starting goaltender in the process.
Because, yeah, Hart's the only one I can really think of that's making – because, like you said, Zamula's going to be a free agent, an RFA. So that takes away, what, like – $900,000.
I can't imagine he's going to make much on his next contract.
I would assume it's about league minimum or so. I would assume it's under
maybe
900.
A million, million and a half.
I'd see a million maybe at the high end.
And then they've got all kinds of dead cap here with these fucking buyouts. 3.5, 1.6. Do some quick math skis. 39.5. 2 plus 6.4 plus 6.2 plus 3.5 plus 1.6, 72.4 plus another 2 mil or so for the Andre and Adderd, so 70. 74.5-ish million, round up to maybe about 75 million, and the cap's at 87.5 next year, I believe.
Okay, so we got about $12 million in cap
space. You got
some
money. If they want to go out and make a trade for a top center or for anybody, they've got the assets and the money to do so. They're not in financial constraints, but as just noted, their roster's already full, which means if they want to do anything, they're going to have to get a little creative here, and creativity is a word that the Philadelphia Flyers have not had. You know, I've not associated the word creative with the Flyers in 15 years now.
I do have one thing that I'm kind of wondering about, because obviously, right now,
that's with Peterson. If you buy Peterson out, clear that $4 million. That's even better.
Since the whole new regime has come in, the goal has been get ready for Mishkov. And I wonder, obviously, when Mishkov is on his ELC, you can try and build up that roster to get around him, because especially if Mishkov comes over at age 21, he's more likely to have an amazing rookie season, because he'll have those over three years of playing against men in what is widely considered the second best league in the world. And then you could fill up the entire roster like around him with a lot more money and support. But I got to also imagine Danny Briere, I doubt that he's getting it ready this early, because it's probably 6 years or 5 years until you're paying Mishkov the big bucks. But I wonder if
you can't
Danny
just sit
Briere,
on your fucking thumb for two more years until Mishkov.
You can't
shows
do
up.
That. You can't do that. But I got to wonder if Danny Briere has some sort of way of trying to coordinate contracts so that there's
you
not
don't need
too
to build
money.
A contending team. You don't need to win a cup next season, but you gotta fucking take a step forward here.
You do.
There needs to be some good grace shown that there's actually a plan this time around. We're not, we're a bubble fucking playoff team. This is great. We're going to run it back like they did in, 1718, like they did in 1920. You know, you don't need that. You know, you got to prove that things are different this time, that you're not going to settle
gotta
for,
use
for
that,
this.
He's got to use that money right now. And I hope that he's not just, I hope that Danny Briere is not just waiting for that big Michkov contract that's going to come when he's, when his ELC is up. He's got to spend the money now to show that he really cares and that this team is more than just, oh, we'll run it back and see what happens next year.
Yeah. Identically, by the way, with the exception of like two or three bodies on that defense.
But even then, like, Andre played some games this year.
Played four. He's been absolute tearing it up in Lehigh, though. He should be up in the main roster right now.
I wonder if he'll be brought up if, like, Sealer and Walker both get traded.
So my guess is Walker is getting traded. That one seems like a certainty at this point.
I feel like that is too.
Sealer, he shouldn't be, but given that they clearly are on the homerism train here with this Ryan Poehling nonsense, I'd assume they're bringing Sealer back as well, which, they clearly don't like Ronnie Adder in the first place, even though his deal's one way. If they lose him on waivers, they wouldn't give a fuck. And Andre, he's small! They just demoted Brink to the AHL for being small, so I can't imagine they've got a lot of sympathy for this guy either. So, they could bring back Sealer, that's five, and just re-sign Zmola for another year. That's six. There you go. Bring in another rando Mark Stahl for number seven and run it back. I mean, that's what? Two defensemen and Hart that you're losing next season, and the rest of the roster is the same if they don't change anything.
And you got to imagine that, like, especially if the Flyers can't turn it around at all in these last 2-ish months.
If they just keep getting their asses kicked for the next 2.5 months till the season,
then what do
comes
we expect next year? Then
are see, we really gonna... That's been my stance the entire fucking time from these idiots on Twitter that everything's so great and amazing. We got to bring everyone back and Sealer. If these guys are topping out right now, if Konechny, Sanheim, Couturier, Farabee, if they're all at their fucking peaks and everyone else is playing well for the most part, what do you expect to be different next year if you keep the band together?
Especially losing, like, the one big factor. One of the big factors about how good we were was the fact that guys like Sanheim and Sean Walker were, like, exceeding expectations.
And then Carter Hart was saving their ass.
And Carter Hart was saving their ass, too.
It's like...
And now... Sean Walker, there have been less people who are like, we can't trade Sean Walker because he's not playing as well. Now, I'm not saying that he's playing awfully, but he's not playing as well
as
he was.
He's not what he was doing in October.
Exactly. Sanheim isn't either.
Nope.
Remember that Linsanity run he had?
Yeah.
Where everyone's like, oh my God, Sanheim's an elite defenseman. And now it's back to like...
Turns out he's just a dude.
He's just back to like being like an okay top 4D.
Yeah. Yep.
Who's here for eight more years.
Fuck! if everyone's topping out, if there are some people underperforming and you said, they have more in them and run it back next season and try again, that's one thing. But if everyone's at their fucking peaks and you're just running it back, what do you expect? At best case, they're going to be a bubble team again.
Yeah, Owen Tippett has his best points per game of, ever right now. I think Konechny's is on pace to have a career year as well.
Yes.
Pretty
much everybody is, actually, point-wise.
Yeah.
Farabee's and... long since shattered 40 points in his top goal scoring. It's just like, everyone's there and there's no room. I assume they buy out Atkinson and Peterson. That'd be my guess.
I can't see them keeping both of them.
They
have the ability to buy out either of them? Because...
They can buy them both out. Yeah.
I thought we only have three buyout spots, and we have D'Angelo, Lindblom, and...
Lindblom is up.
And Hart. Not Kevin Hayes.
Hayes
is retained salary. That's
you only
different.
Have D'Angelo for 1 year at 1.6, so they could buy out both Atkinson and Peterson.
Okay.
And it's not bad. Peterson's $1 million next year. I believe Atkinson was 2.3, I believe. So that, as well, saves a bunch of money in a roster spot. But even that point, that's just... opening up a winger spot for Bobby Brink to be a full-time player, and that's just a backup goaltender. Like, that's not exactly creating the waves here that you need
so
to
really, like,
rise to super.
So if we say that Sean Walker leaves and Nick Seeler is kept, Cam Atkinson and Cal Peterson are both gone, whether that's through buyout or some way they trade him away. So at that point, it really looks like the only new player next year, unless if they do something crazy, is a backup goalie.
Pretty much. Ronnie Addard, if you're lucky.
Maybe Ronnie Addard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I don't hear Risto's name much anymore with trade speculation. I rarely even hear Nick Seeler's, which makes me wonder if the Flyer, if Danny Briere just said, we're not trading Nick Seeler.
We're overvaluing one of our depth players? What?
Because, yeah, it's only Sean Walker. And,
it's pretty much Walker right now. Yeah.
Remember when we thought that there's a decent possibility he could get a first-round pick?
Yeah,
are
I think
sure?
Those days are gone.
Yeah.
It is the trade deadline. Anything's possible.
It is. You're right. But I mean, Savard got a first-round pick.
Predicted value right now is probably not a first-round pick.
I would assume he could possibly get a second-rounder if a team was desperate enough. But again, remember that most likely whatever team he's going to are contenders, and most likely that's a late second-round pick.
The Lightning were the one that Anthony was talking about being rumored. They do not have a first or second round pick this year, and they do not have their first round pick next year. They do have a second round in 25 and a first and second in 2026. So anything they get from them would be in the future.
Mm-hmm. I don't think Danny Briere would trade Seeler for stuff like that. I could be wrong. I could be very wrong, because Danny Briere has been the GM of this team for less than a year. We know about, like, really two major trades that he's done. And neither of them are really something that he had too much say in. They
weren't.
Yeah. Because, like, I think we had talked about that most likely for the Provorov trade,
it was a
Danny was
GM
probably
trade
more and of a passenger, most likely.
Yes. With Kekalainen and Rob Blake. And making the bulk of that deal. And then Cutter Gauthier, their hands were tied. What the hell was he supposed to do? You know, you were just looking for
but
best
it was
possible
a
value out
damn
there.
Damn good trade.
It was. You know, it was just
I guess that's
what
a
they
saving
were served.
I guess that could be sort of a saving grace for, although I would hate if people use him as a reason why we can run it back, but seeing a full year of Jamie Drysdale, hopefully healthy, would be a really big win for this team. Especially if he can take a step up from this year to next year.
The best way to do that would be to find him a legitimate top lefty to play with.
Oh, but Daniel, they got Cam York and Travis Sanheim.
Yeah, great. Not good enough. That's the fucking thing with Nick Seeler. God, either call up Addard and Andre and see what you have in your top two defensive prospects, or go out in big game hunt and try and bring in Noah Hanifin or something to play with Jamie Dry. Like, why?
Exactly.
Why are you bringing back Nick Seeler?
Exactly. And the thing before Jamie Drysdale, it was all about get Cam York an elite like top pairing guy. Like, we need to surround our young defensemen with elite. Like, we need at least just one elite defenseman.
You would think that after all these years, that's a lesson they would have learned, but nope.
How many times did we draft a defenseman in the first round between, like, 2013 and 2019?
Far too many times.
Like, what? Wasn't Haig a first-round pick in 2013?
I think Haig was a second-round pick, wasn't he?
I thought he was a first. He might have been an early second. But I do know Travis Sanheim in 2014. Ivan Provorov in 2015. Rubtsov was our first round pick in 2016. 2017, we didn't pick a defenseman in the first round.
Had Haig was a second round pick.
Okay.
So you had what the hell's going on here? Sam Moran, Travis Sanheim, Ivan Provorov,
Cam York, and Oliver Bonk have all been picked in the first round since 2010.
Cam York.
As defensemen.
And Oliver Bonk. Andre was a second round pick as well.
Yeah, I knew Andre wasn't a first round pick. You would think that out of those first round pick defensemen that we've gotten, that our best defenseman wasn't the guy that we picked in, what, Shane Gostisbehere was picked in, what, the third round?
Third round in 2011, I think?
12.
2012?
2012.
Oh, well, in that case.
But yeah, it's pretty insane that Ghost has a strong case to be the best defenseman out of all of them.
And he's not even good at defense. He just scores on bad teams.
At least he can score on bad teams.
Yeah, you know. They got Zamula now. He's a power play master.
Oh, my God. I don't know why they're not putting Jamie Drysdale at, like, on the first power play. Like, I get that he's having some good chemistry with Morgan Frost, but wasn't one of the big things about Drysdale that they loved, that Keith Jones and Danny Briere loved, was like his puck moving ability?
Theoretically, yeah.
Wouldn't you want this young, great puck handling defenseman to try and see if he can help the worst power play in the league?
Not in Tortorella's world, no.
Just
get
the
Andre, whose single purpose in Lehigh has been quarterbacking a power play, and he's doing a damn fine job at it, and they haven't even considered recalling him yet.
I mean, like, honestly, Drysdale and Andre seem like they would be great 1-2 power play quarterbacks.
Yeah. Yep.
And we're going with Drysdale on the second power play and Zamula on the first one because he had a couple goals. Solid. Just absolutely solid. Yeah. Obviously neither of us are NHL coaches, but I've mentioned this as well. I know that John Tortorella isn't like the guy for the power play, but I can never trust a team that John Tortorella is coaching to have anything but a horrid power play anymore.
Yeah, I think
the last time he's had a power play whose percentage was outside the, like, was outside the bottom 10, or that was above 20th. I think the last time he had that was either his first season with Columbus or one of his seasons with the Rangers.
What makes it worse is the Phantoms have a top 5 power play in the AHL, and they've had it all season, and it's led by Olli Lexell, who should be in the NHL and is not. Well, I guess he is technically at the moment, but he's only played 3 games all season in a very limited role. Emil Andre, who should have been at the NHL and used in an offensive role rather than a minimal defensive role, and Ronnie Attard, who should have been in the NHL like 2 years ago at this point, but they just refuse to play him up there. It's like, the players are having success in your organization running a power play, and those are the players that they're not recalling to the NHL in favor of playing DeLaurier for 5 minutes a night.
Yeah. And you know what? Honestly, like, looking at it, ever since Tortorella left Tampa Bay, so since the 2008-2009 season, Tortorella's teams have had power plays outside, like above 20th 3 times. He was 13th in 09-10, 18th in 10-11, and 12th in 16-17. Every other time, his power play is below 20th in the league. Usually close to the 30s, if not in the 30s. So I don't know what it exactly. I get that Tortorella is more of a defensive coach. That's
not even
very
blame the
well
fucking
seen.
Coach on this one. It's your goddamn, you have the players at your disposal and you're not using them.
You are, but that's also a coaching thing.
It's not Tortorella's decision.
not entirely, but obviously
Rocky
whatever
Johnson's decision.
Obviously, whatever he's doing for the power play, whether that's who he brings in to coach the power play,
Rocky Johnson has three teeth and zero brain cells. Yes, you should not be using his power play. And all of your top power play guys are in the goddamn AHL.
All I'm saying is that whatever influence John Tortorella has at all on any power play, including who coaches, who anything like that, he sucks at it.
Nick DeLoria has played 10 minutes of ice time just once since Christmas.
Jeez.
9, 8, 7, 3, 7, 4, 9, 11, 5, 7, 4. They're rolling 11 forwards, Nick DeLoria being one of them, and then he's playing less than 10 minutes.
I hate seeing multiple games in a row where we're rolling seven fucking defensemen.
That's pretty much what they were doing.
Why are we doing this? There is a reason that most teams roll with 12 forwards and six defensemen.
You're gassing the shit out of your forwards because you're only playing nine of them because DeLoria is not playing.
DeLoria's not playing.
Paling was playing very little at that time. He wasn't breaking 10 minutes either.
So you have two guys who are playing less than a sixth of the game, and you have seven defensemen. So you basically have a fourth line of one player.
Yes. And you're icing seven defensemen, one of them almost exclusively on the power play.
I don't quite understand what John Tortorella is going for with all this. I mean,
it was their problem with their construction back in the summer. It's like there's just so many fucking bodies here.
There are, and it's
so many random
dudes. I just don't get it. I don't understand. I would love to get Torts on here and just ask him these questions.
He would deny
everything.
Single time.
He wouldn't answer.
I've got no answer. It's none of your business.
Did you guys yell at Kevin Hayes?
I do love Torts for that kind of stuff.
That is pretty funny.
It's my favorite. I love when he's petty, but I hate his decisions. His roster decisions are driving me nuts, and he's not answering for them, which drives me even more nuts. This guy will go on fucking 20-minute soliloquies on every other topic, except when it comes to answering for his dumbass moves.
Exactly. I wish that he would answer that shit. Like, you know how we all want refs to, be held accountable for what they do? Why aren't we trying to hold Torts more accountable for all that he's doing? He's making questionable decisions. When the team was rolling, it's easier to just be like, maybe he knows what he's doing.
It's easier to ignore the problems.
It's easier to ignore
some wins.
But then when you start losing, obviously the narrative's going to change. All these things that we've been mentioning about how I've seen you talk about some of the things that he does with roster construction. I voiced my opinion on, I absolutely hate 11 forward 7D. I've mentioned that a few times. It's just, and like I said, I understand that we're not NHL coaches and that he and John Tortorella is one of the most decorated regular season coaches of all time. But we've also been watching hockey for a long time. It's not like we can just discredit our knowledge of the game. Like we can understand that what he's doing with the roster construction especially just doesn't really make sense. It doesn't seem to be a recipe that can sustain for a long time. I mean, I got to wonder how much, because it seemed like for several weeks, we never had 12 forwards.
No, it's been 11-7 for quite some time now.
It's been like, I think there was one game and I saw, we're not going 11-7. Holy shit, that's great.
It was the last one or two right before the break here. But before that, it was a pretty regular occurrence.
It was like every game for, I think, at least 2 weeks. Like you said, they weren't really playing. They were really playing 9-7,
yep.
9-6 with two guys pretty much riding the bench and another guy really only getting out there when it's the power play.
Yep.
So, like, you have, besides the goalies, you go from using 18 of them to just, what, 15.
Yep.
It makes no sense. I don't get why using 15 guys seems better than using 18. I also got to hope that, like, after this All-Star break, just they can really open up the – I hope that they can start opening up the roster to guys.
They won't.
They won't.
They're not even going to get the trade deadline.
Because, like you said, there's no one on the team besides, like, Sean Walker and Cam Atkinson who's probably not going to be here next year.
Walker's going to be gone at the deadline. If you're lucky, Sealer's going to be, which would open up for Adderd and Andre. And that's about it. I mean, you're not – every forward is here. And most of – like, Atkinson probably isn't a deadline move. If they move a lot and it's not happening at the deadline. Like, These are all things that move on summer. Like, your best bet is you're going to have one defenseman spot open if you're fucking lucky. And that's whether or not they even bother recalling Andre Adder. They may just call up fucking, I don't even know who's down, Victor Mete again. Just let him serve. He's the seventh guy.
I wouldn't be surprised if they only get rid of Sean Walker and they bring up one guy. I wouldn't be surprised if they would bring up one of them.
They call up Andre so he can play 3 minutes a night in the NHL as your seventh defenseman.
I wouldn't be surprised if they just.
I would have put it past them one fucking bit.
If they had just one defenseman leave, I wouldn't be surprised if Victor Mete comes up just because him and Stahl can kind of play.
Oh my God, I forgot about Mark Stahl. Oh God.
Him and Mark Stahl would probably. Are we really discounting the fact that most likely if Sean Walker is the only one to leave this team during the trade deadline, that this team wouldn't have Mark Stahl and Victor Mete as our sixth and seventh defensemen?
I fucking forgot Mark Stahl even existed. This guy that they signed to be this premier trade ship at the deadline. Yeah, those are going to be some fun tweets to pull up when the time comes.
But Daniel, remember, sixth round picks are so valuable.
Yeah.
I don't remember who told me that, but I remember when the whole Hathaway signing happened, and I was like, why? Why do we need Garnet Hathaway? And someone told me that we're going to trade him at the deadline, and I'm like, what the fuck good is a sixth or fifth round pick going to do for us? And he's like, sixth round picks are valuable, Noah. But God, and then I saw this guy looking at the Kevin Hayes trade and being like, only a sixth round pick? It's like, I thought they were valuable. What happened to that? Because we can have all the sixth round picks in a draft.
I feel like if you even got a sixth round pick from Mark Stahl at this point, that would be highway robbery by Bruce Bear.
I feel like sixth round pick is high for him. Like,
you had a sixth round pick in 2032 at this point from Mark Stahl, it would be a
future considerations is headed our
way. Yeah.
We're going to get a future considerations jersey.
I'll just keep him and fucking resign him too.
Hey, might as well.
Oh, God.
He'll be signed to an 8x8 contract.
League minimum, but it's 8 years long. Just to fucking have him here.
You know what, though? A little break from just Flyer stuff in general. I've always wondered, because I've done this stupid thing in franchise, like when I play NHL franchise, if there's like a really good like third liner I like and he wants like no money, I'll give him like 8 years at like $1 million. Just because, like.
It's what I used to do with Sam Rand all the time. Yeah.
I'm like, has any NHL GM ever thought about that? Like, no trade clause, nothing like that. You just get them on a 8 year, $1.5 million contract. You could probably trade them at any point during that time.
Probably.
But I mean that's just a stupid thought that just kind of entered my mind thinking about the Nick DeLoria contract. Like, I was like, what if they gave him like an 8 year, $1.3 million contract?
May as well. I mean, who even cares?
Imagine if they sign him to a 4 year extension at like the same cap hit. we basically would have gotten that.
I mean, they may as well. They're re-signing everyone else. Get on this.
I still can't get. I still can't get over the fact that possibly the only new player next year could be a backup goalie.
Yeah, and that's entirely possible.
It's entirely possible. Every single member of next year's team was on this team this year.
Yep.
Are we? No, because we're definitely in a wild card spot, aren't we?
Last I checked, both the wild card spots were in the Atlantic Division. I don't know what the most recent standing is. It's been a couple days now. Flyers are still third place in the Metro with 56 points. Hurricanes have 61, Rangers have 63.
Oh, wild right, card that's
spots
why.
Are Toronto and Detroit with 58 and 57.
So, yes, the wild card spots are both above us. That is why.
There is a little bit of separation now. Islanders have 52, Penguins have 51, Devils have 51.
Yeah, I mean, Penguins...
Sabres have 48, so you're starting to see things...
Penguins have four games in hand.
See things even out there a little bit, so...
Penguins do have four games in hand, which... The Penguins, Devils, and Capitals could all catch up to us. Yeah.
Yep.
So
we're only at the 50 game mark anyway. There's still plenty of time for shit to go sideways.
There is. It's like you said, we just reached 50 games. I
feel like this season was going on forever right now.
So yeah, no team has more than 50 games played. So most teams have more than 30 games left. Like I said, the Flyers are 14th in the league right now. They are the third worst team in the playoffs. I believe. We are the worst team in the Eastern Conference in the playoffs. And both the Kings and the Blues, who are the two wild card teams in the West, have 54 points. So, actually, if the Kings and Blues both win their next game and we lose, we will be the worst team in the playoffs, in the playoff picture right now.
Yay! God.
Oh, wait, I thought that the All-Star break had already started.
There's a couple games tonight yet, I think.
Yeah. Holy crap. Wait, what the hell? The Flyers last played on the 27th. There were two games on Sunday. There was a game on Monday. And there's two games tonight. And then there's three games tomorrow.
I assume everyone else has their break.
And then
after
the
All-Star break.
And then the 5th, there's two games. The
Flyers come back on the 6th. We still got a full
Flyers,
week off. Thank God.
They don't play. They get more than a week off.
Yeah, we had, 9 days total there?
I think 10.
So, yeah, they play next Tuesday against Florida, Winnipeg, and Seattle. So there you go. Three fucking challenges right off the bat here.
So, yeah, that'll be 9 full days between those games.
And if we know what the Flyers do after long breaks...
Plus, we're playing the Panthers.
Yeah, Panthers, Jets, Seattle, Arizona, Toronto, Devils the following week.
Can we also just mention about how Dylan Dubé and the Calgary Flames? I don't know when they made that announcement. I don't know if it's up to the Flames or it's up to the player to decide what is said on there. But just a reminder
that so I saw a tweet before,
is,
we went on here that apparently the Flames did not know the circumstances of his absence at the time.
Okay.
Whether or not that's true, I don't know. But he was the first one to leave multiple days before the hard stuff came out, and then multiple days, obviously, before the press, you know, caught into the news that the 28 team was there. So it is very possible he wanted to... He was going to go leave to go turn himself in and told the team under mental health stuff, and that just wasn't the truth. That could have been a lie. However... There's also a chance that they knew exactly what was going on here and tried to phrase it differently and just hoped that it would be swept under the rug. Either way, not a great look on the Calgary Flames.
It isn't really a great look. No. If it was, I hope that it was that whole thing where Dubé tried to turn himself in early and just said under the guise of mental health, which I saw someone saying that technically, I guess you could put that because probably all five of them are not having the best mental health right now.
Imagine facing a long jail sentence for violent crimes doesn't do the best thing for your mind.
No. But I also think that's quite...
a stretch?
I think that's a stretch to put as a reason. I think that the personal reasons... I saw people getting upset about the personal reasons as well. And they're like, you make us think that a family member died, but like they could... It's like, what do you want them to say? I mean,
that was the original, you know, thing with Hart, right? The night that he went off, you know, everyone said, oh, Team Canada. And, you know, it's obviously what it ended up being. But when you say personal reasons, maybe a family member died. Maybe he had a problem. Maybe he did something like this. You know, it didn't necessarily correlate to that. So, but I don't know what you're supposed to say in that situation.
Exactly, because a personal situation... But, like, this person was making it seem like every time, which... Usually, it whenever you hear a player, besides them going to the player assistance program, usually when a player takes a personal leave, usually you hear it's about a family member,
yeah,
especially a death. So I get why that is the connotation with saying personal matters, but personal matters does also apply to that. Like, because whether you like it or not, being charged with a crime is a personal matter. Having to leave work to go be on trial is a personal matter.
And as Danny Breer said, there's nothing the organization can say anyway right now.
Yeah.
They're not at you know, not at the matter to discuss the topic of why he left. And this would have been, you know, they announced it before even that the media announced it, that they're, you know, want the players to turn themselves in. So there's nothing you can say here. Can't say Carter Hart's going to jail
By the time that conference came around, I don't know what people were going to expect him to say. Because, I mean, we all kind of understood that most likely when, like you said, by that time, I don't know if all five players, obviously Dubé and Hart had gotten leaves of absence by the time Danny Breer had his press conference. I do also remember that the stuff about the London police asking for five players to surrender to them happened before then. I don't remember. I think Alex Formanton did get a leave before it, but I don't remember. I don't believe either.
It was Dubé. It was Hart. They released the stuff. Formanton was the next one, and then the two Devils came after that.
Yeah, and I just don't remember exactly when Danny Briere's conference was. I know it was after the
Right after the Canada thing came out.
Okay.
That would have been, and then Formanton, it was the morning after Hart, which was the day before. Yes. Yeah, so, yeah, and Hart, Formanton, news came out, and then Breer had his private, and then Formanton, and then the two Devils.
All right, yeah, so... Obviously, by the time that Danny Breer's press conference came out, we had already known that Dylan Dubé was taking a leave and that Hart was taking a leave and that the London police were saying that five players from the 2018 World Junior team, Canada World Junior team, should surrender to them. And obviously, that connects a lot of dots. I guess, really, you could have hoped that Danny Breer just, like, confirms it, but at that point, what's really the point? Because we're gonna find out no matter what. And like he mentioned, like, I don't know what else anyone expected him to say. Like, I doubt that he's privy to much, if any, of the investigation.
He's not allowed to say anything, probably, and he probably doesn't have much to answer anyway. Yes,
I would be surprised. Even if he was allowed to say anything, I would be surprised if the only thing he knows is that Carter Hart is implicated.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's the only thing he knows, that Carter Hart is going to be charged and has been charged as of now, and that he won't be able to play for the Flyers. That, and if the NHL told Danny Breer that he could say whatever he wanted, that's probably the only thing we would hear, that Hart wasn't going to be with the team.
Breer's official statement, we are aware of this morning's press reports on a very serious matter. We will respond appropriately when the outcomes of the investigation are made public. The NHL has been very clear that teams should refer all investigation-related questions to them. In the meantime, members of the organization, including the Flyers players, will not be commenting on any further. That's all we can say at this moment. And then these dumbass reporters went on for 10 minutes trying to pry something out of him they didn't know. And then they tried it the next morning on Tortorella, too. And that didn't work. But
I get that they're trying to do their jobs, but at the same time...
They literally just told you they can't say anything about
it. Literally, Danny Beard just said, I'm legally not allowed to. Yeah. Anything that... the only thing I can say about it is what I'm telling you right now, that we can't talk about it.
Yep.
But let's have everyone ask questions about it anyway. Like, what do you expect? It's the stupidest thing. That's kind of why I hate reporters and all. And of course, then I shouldn't say I hate all reporters, but like sports reporting drives me crazy sometimes, a lot of times, because they ask some of the most redundant and stupid questions. Like, how many times do I have to hear, oh, what do you think you guys could have done better? Like, I don't know. And of course, then we see the bad side of it, where what Anthony Sanfilippo saying that Kevin Hayes' fingerprints are all over the Cutter Gauthier's.
Dumbass.
Like.
The official Flames quote here, by the way: we have become aware of the charge of sexual assault that has been laid against El Dubé. We take this matter very seriously. Because this matter is now pending legal proceedings, we will have no further comment at this time. We had no knowledge of pending charges at the time Dylan's request for leave of absence was granted.
Okay, I would assume that probably the Flames didn't know. It seems as though the teams have been left with very, very, if any, information at all.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if the NHL didn't tell them anything. I wouldn't be surprised if Danny Briere didn't know about about why Carter Hart took his leave of absence until the news came out, or maybe just before the news came out from the London police.
Well, that's all I have to talk about tonight.
That's all I have to talk about as well. I mean, I guess my biggest thing is right now, obviously, most of the people listening to this are probably not beat reporters, probably don't have any credentials or anything like that. But even still,
even those people are something like this, is like that's where they get their material from.
The one thing is that make sure that you know what you're talking about before you say stuff, because I mean, if you're going to make a big accusation about something, like, we just got to stop doing stuff like what happened with Kevin Hayes, where reports come out that are people trying to be first at something, the reports are coming out and it's completely false. And then, cause it has real world consequences. We saw Kevin Hayes and Cutter Gauthier both getting, although I'm sure Cutter Gauthier getting death threats, which again, isn't okay. He's probably getting some, not only because, probably more because he wanted to leave, but Kevin Hayes getting them because of a false report is awful and just goes to show that being first doesn't make you the best. So just be careful with what you read out there and say.
Can we wrap this shit up now, please?
Yep.
At the end, the Flyer fan at Burley Pocket, Burley underscore pod. Freaking Flyer was up Sunday talking that Hart stuff again. Mike is a lawyer, man. He's Canadian. If you're not checking one out yet, go do it. They go into pretty decent detail on what to come here. I think this is the only show I'm doing this week. Another Freaking Flyer will be up this coming Sunday, the 4th, and then we'll be back next week with who knows who after the Monday London press release or whatever it is they're doing up there. Full-on media circus. But, yeah, plenty of shit on the website, BarelyPuck.com. And, Noah, where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter, @Flyers24, but the F is a PH.
Oh, God. All right, everyone. Until next time, goodbye and good night. Drop the gloves, let's go. Drop the-